You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This week's episode is brought to you by Ducks Unlimited. To find out more about Ducks Unlimited events in your area, go to ducks.org/events. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Outdoor News Radio, first full weekend of 2023. Hope everybody is enjoying the winter weather, kind of traditional weather, traditional temperatures. Another big snowstorm this past week probably didn't help ice making up north. We will probably get some ice reports later in the show. I know we'll have Les Meister with us also to probably talk about some of the crazy headlines out of Wisconsin. Going to kick it off now with the editor of Minnesota Outdoor News, Mr. Tim Spielman, like I always do every week. Tim, welcome. You got out and shot one more pheasant before the season ended, it sounded like.
Yeah. Friend and I went out Saturday, and we got four. Did the old, we kind of chuckled because we said, well, the advice we heard was, got to walk the cattails, as if we'd never heard that one before.
Right, yeah.
So we did that, and actually the best walking was on the inside of a slough. The snow had kind of piled up in the cattails, but we got four out of there, and then I went out just for a brief period on Sunday, the last hurrah, and got one more and called it a season. So I usually try to do that at Christmas, but the weather was bad. The roads were bad. I didn't get to where I wanted to go. So, and I heard a local report about ice fishing. I hadn't been out, so I called my retired friend Mike, and he said, "Go pheasant hunting."
How deep was the snow, Tim?
It all depended. You know, down there they've had so much wind, so it can be easy walking, and then all of a sudden you'd be in this drift area, and it was the kind of drifts that, you know, about a quarter of the time you could walk on them, and you felt like you were walking down, you know, across your living room. But we got the last hunt in Minnesota, and so all is good.
All wrapped up in Minnesota. I believe it goes through at least the 15th, or is it the end of the month out in South Dakota, Tim? I'm not sure, but I know they've got some January hunting out there now.
I think it's through the entire month. Yeah. I'm not positive, but I'm 90% sure.
Okay, yeah, so let's check that out. But so still some opportunity to chase some roosters across the region. Tim, why don't we jump into a couple of headlines? One, late last week, it was last Friday. We call that a news dump, don't we, in the reporting business, when the government agencies on the cusp of a holiday weekend decide to drop a big news story that definitely deserves, you know, more reporting time than a lot of folks want to devote going into a holiday weekend. But it involves the good old waters of the United States rule. This is something Outdoor News has been reporting on for 20 years, hasn't it, since those Supreme Court rulings. What was it, in 2000 and 2002?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, if you you probably remember the name Rapanos.
Yeah. Rapanos. Was that out of Illinois?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it was the Chicago Sanitary something or another. Right. I can't even remember. It goes so far back.
And then there was one out of Michigan, I believe.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, that's right. Now there's apparently another one in Idaho.
Yeah, so. The Sackett case, yes.
Yes, yes.
Basically, these were Supreme Court rulings that interpreted the Clean Water Act. And the George W. Bush administration was going to jump into it. I think they had a rule written, but they kind of ran out of time in their administration before they implemented it. It's my understanding, tell me if I'm wrong, that I think that rule was what the Bush administration was going to unveil was probably pretty close to traditional Clean Water Act, you know, rulings and interpretations. Didn't get around to it. So then the Obama administration came along with its version, which I think folks said was probably at least mildly more restrictive than what had been status quo. So yep. The Trump administration came along and yelled and screamed and said the Obama rule is horrible and eviscerated it. And a lot of folks said went too far to the other extreme And now we have the Biden ruling, which, based on what I'm reading, sounds like a kind of falls in between, at least the Obama and the Trump administration rule. Is that your interpretation based on what we're seeing and reading so far?
I think so.
Yeah,
that
I know.
An answer. I think so.
No, I get it.
It's, you know, when you read these stories, whenever it goes back the other way, the old roller coaster, when it you hear the same arguments, you know. In this case, it's government overreach, and, you know, if you were going the other way, then it's a disaster for waters and that sort of thing. So there's a lawsuit going on. This could change. You know, that's why I kind of chuckle when I see statements that from the EPA that basically say, this will make everybody happy. Because there's no way in heck this is going to make everybody happy. It never has and it never will. But I'm reminded of a story way back when. And there was an official from the northeastern Minnesota federal elected official. What was his name? I forget. But
Oberstar.
Yeah. Way back when, he was trying to restore the clean water rules prior to that, the ruling in some of those cases, right?
Yep.
Back to the original intent, I think, is the language we used a lot. And I forget what happened.
It didn't pass. Yeah, he couldn't get it through Congress. He was trying to do it the way you really are supposed to get it done, right? Through good old-fashioned congressional officials making decisions and passing laws.
Yep. Well, there's a lot of sky is falling on both sides of this, and it reminds me of a short story from North Dakota, a TV station. Someone from the Minnesota DNR sent me years ago, and it was talking about, and maybe we mentioned this in the radio in the past, but people were up in arms because this will place regulations. This is classic overreach. It'll place regulations on every small wetland and pothole anywhere. And the video on the TV station was of an actual pothole in a road.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went, oh, my God.
Right.
I guess they didn't quite get what sort of pothole we were talking about at the time.
Yeah, that's what we're dealing with. Well, I remember when Trump passed his rule, he gave a speech. I remember I pushed it on social media where he said, I don't know what a prairie pothole is, but it sounds bad. You know? So, yeah, I mean, you got people at the highest echelons of government who don't understand this. You got media who live in the prairie pothole region that don't get it. It definitely gets a little inside baseballish. You know, Tim, reading that story that you printed this week, it said there was a judge ruling that threw out the Trump version and reverted to a 1986 interpretation. And I paused when I read that, and I said, can't we just all go back to that? You know, that served everybody pretty well for, 15, 20 years.
Yep.
Instead, we got this back and forth, and like you said, we've got this Sackett thing in the Supreme Court that could ultimately throw out this latest ruling. So it...
And like you said, the timing was interesting because normally you and I both would have gotten shellacked by emails from conservation groups, basically in this case, applauding it. And as of Tuesday, I hadn't seen any, which is really a surprise. Mm-hmm. And you hadn't either, I don't think.
No, which got me wondering, do they not like it? Is this too hot for them to talk about? Or was it just a function of it hitting, like we said, on a holiday weekend?
Yeah, I think half the world was on vacation for the past 5 days, if trying to gather news was any indication. Right. So that probably was the case.
Yeah. Well, big story. Again, it's just another chapter in this ongoing story that's been going on for years. And I don't necessarily think it resolves anything long term. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Jerisian with Tim Spielman, kicking off this week's show. Tim, why don't we lighten things up a little bit and talk about that story out of North Dakota? We were talking a little bit off air about it. It seemed like a headline. It should have been from Wisconsin. a woman had a pet raccoon that the cops confiscated from her, took it away, euthanized it because she took it into a bar, huh?
Right. Yeah. Rocky. Like you mentioned, every raccoon that becomes a pet is named Rocky. I used to know a Rocky, actually, but that's a whole other story. But yeah, it, according to the report, it didn't get loose or bite anyone, but state health officials still issued a warning about potential rabies exposure. And so she was arrested. The raccoon was euthanized, and she ended up getting $1,000 fine and a year of probation, which is, it seems kind of harsh.
It does a little bit. I mean, you know, I don't want to ever encourage anyone to bring raccoons, and they're wild animals. They're real cute when they're babies. I think I knew someone who did this in the 80s, and it was real cute when it was a baby, and then they get older, and they get mean, and they bite everybody, and it's just it's just a bad idea.
True, but, you know, we're talking North Dakota. I don't know what part of the state, but people need entertainment.
Yeah, her name was Erin Christensen, age 38, out of Mattock, pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges surrounding this case. She faced a maximum sentence of 2 years in jail and $7,500 in fines. It's like, wow. And then the final line in the story says, Christensen said Rocky's fate has left her family traumatized. I don't mean to mock and laugh, but the whole thing is pretty bizarre.
It is. I don't know how long they had Rocky, but I'm also trying to, she was charged with tampering with evidence. I do wonder what exactly that was. A
lot of drama. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the bottom line is don't bring in a wild raccoon. And if you do, don't take it to a bar.
Yeah. Don't take it to public places. That's, and as we were saying off air, well, you know, why didn't they just release it? Well, at least maybe we saved a few duck nests in the deal, huh?
We may have, probably. Yeah. Right. You know, Rocky probably would have reproduced as well. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, you can read all about Rocky Raccoon inside news page of this week's print edition of Outdoor News. Well, Tim, thank you for helping me kick off the show. Have a great week.
Yep. You too. Thanks. Yep.
Tim Spielman, editor here at Outdoor News. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Reel in your next catch with Fleet Farm. Shop the Midwest's largest in-store selection of ice fishing gear and get everything you need all in one stop. Going on now. Get a Vexilar FL18 SE Ginspack Fish Locator for just $359.99. You can check out this deal and more in-store or online at fleetfarm.com. Find all the gear you need at Fleet Farm, your ice fishing headquarters.
Join Minnesota Safari Club International for its 47th annual World Hunting Expo, February 10th and 11th at the Minneapolis Marriott Northwest off 694 near Maple Grove. Come check out Minnesota's largest big game expo featuring 75 exhibitors from not only right here in Minnesota, but from across North America. The event is free to the public during the day, and evening dinner auction tickets are on sale now at MinnesotaSCI.com. That's MinnesotaSCI.com.
Nice Chevy Trailblazer, Ben.
Thanks. It was love at first sight.
But didn't you say you loved all the room in the Traverse?
Oh, yeah.
And didn't you say you loved the style of the Blazer?
No doubt.
And all the tech in the Equinox?
Definitely.
But the Trailblazer was love at first sight?
Well, I didn't say it was the only one I loved at first sight.
The hardest part of driving home in a new Chevy SUV is choosing which one. Click now to learn more. Find new roads at your local Chevy dealer.
This is Tony Roach from Roach's Guide Service. I make my living on the water, and when I'm looking for solid information to stay on good bites, I look to fishingreports.outdoornews.com. This website has the most up-to-date reports from 11 states in our region. Reports come from the region's top pros and experts, including me. Subscriptions start at just $2 a month. Get on the top bites in your area with fishingreports.outdoornews.com.
The Kenai Peninsula is Alaska's playground. It's where you'll find some of the best fishing on the planet. Jason's Guide Service guides on the Kenai River, and this is where you should take your quest for that trophy rainbow trout. You can also get into some of the best sockeye salmon fishing in the world. If you want to take home some fresh wild salmon, there's no better place to do it than on the Kenai River. Check it out at jasonsguideservice.com.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. You may have heard of us, but what are we about? BHA is the voice for your wild public lands, waters, and wildlife. From national level policy work to boots on the ground projects like public land cleanups, we work across North America to uphold the legacy of our public lands and waters, as well as your opportunity to hunt, fish, and recreate on them. Stand up for public lands and waters and become a BHA member today. Visit backcountryhunters.org.
Howdy, folks. Welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline is with you for another segment. Thanks for joining us. If you like the content here, please check out our print version of Outdoor News. Give us a call at 800-535-5191, or you can subscribe at outdoornews.com. We got a brand new website we just launched this past week. Check that out. You can subscribe via either of those venues if you'd like. I want to jump in now with the gentleman who does a lot of great fishing, tackle, and technique writing for Outdoor News, as well as the man behind the Outdoor News Fishing Report, Mr. Glenn Schmidt, coming at us out of central Minnesota. How are you there, Schmidty?
I'm doing just fine today, Rob. How about yourself?
Not bad, not bad. I'm a little tired of shoveling 3 days in a row. I'm ready for this latest storm to move on. It definitely winter out there, isn't it? Man, oh man, I don't recall seeing piles of snow like this, you know, in parking lots and you know, adjacent to sidewalks for years. This is a real winter.
Yeah, it, you know, when they start talking about historical type snows, yeah, you know, we got a good one here. And yeah, it certainly has been a struggle on the back and the shoulders. And, you know, everybody in the southern half of the, you know, third of the state is pretty much in the same boat. So it's Minnesota, and, you know, we get some of this sometimes, and we deal with it and move on, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Although I got to say, the older I get, it seems like I don't deal with it quite as well as I used to, but that's my problem. Schmidty, what does this mean for ice fishing? Kind of got off to a decent start, it seemed like, ice, and then we've had, you know, several storms come through. And I think it's counterintuitive to maybe a lot of folks who don't understand ice making, but snow on ice isn't necessarily good, is it?
Well, no, it's the insulation, you know, an insulator on top of the ice, obviously, for, so when you're talking about ice making and the process. But, you know, I talk about the fun factor all the time when you're ice fishing, and when you get this much snow on top of the ice, the fun factor obviously goes down, and, you know, it's tough to get around and that type of thing. But people will be creative and they'll get out there again. But, you know, like you said, we started off in relatively good shape, you know, and then we, you know, we had that wet, heavy snow a couple of weeks ago, I believe just prior to Christmas, where, you know, everybody was worried about that. And there was some slush that developed, but that super, super cold front behind that seemed to freeze most of that up.
And, okay, good.
Yeah. And people were getting around in relatively good shape in most of the state, either with ATVs or starting to drive on in some cases. And but now you go from where I'm at in central Minnesota and point south, you know, you could put another foot plus on top of this stuff. And I think it's going to get a little sketchy out there again as far as being able to get around.
So you were telling me that over the holidays, the bait shops were doing pretty well. A lot of people off work. That cold snap that we had did firm things up. People enjoyed some pretty decent ice fishing over the holidays, you think?
Yeah, people came out of the woodwork. You know, I talk, you know, I do that fishing report every week, talk to, you know, I don't know, in excess of 30 folks every week. And most of them have become really good friends of mine after doing it 20 years. So and I had many of these guys tell me and gals that, you know, that week from Christmas to New Year's, you know, that holiday break, the traditional time off for everyone. You know, I had some guys tell me it was the best week of business they've had since May.
Oh, great.
It was really the first opportunity that people could start bringing these wheelhouses out, in which we know have become such a big part of this ice fishing deal now. I mean, it's, you know, it's almost like catching fish as a bonus for a lot of these folks. They take the wheelhouse out in the family, throw a movie on and put on some rattle reels and you're winter camping, you know, but, but that weekend was a good deal for, you know, the little boost in the arm for these mom and pop bait shops. And just, it was good to see a lot of people out, you know, fishing in general. Like I said, it was really the first time they could get around. So it was good to see.
So now that we've had this big dumping this past week, this foot plus snow across a wide swath of the state, what does that mean for ice making? What are you expecting this weekend, Glenn, for ice fishing? Is it going to slow things down, unfortunately?
Well, I think, you know, just, yeah, we're going to be forced to reevaluate everything as, you know, as we're doing now, this thing wrapped up on Thursday. And like I said, you know, you're talking foot to whatever, 15 inches of snow. You know, we got a foot here in the central part of the state, just outside of St. Cloud, maybe a little bit more in pockets. But, you know, I fish a lot and I'm on the ice a lot. But, you know, even this week, Rob, before the snow, we were, you know, talking to guys, like I said, we were just starting to drive on some lakes, but then you were still hearing about that 9-inch stuff, you know, on the same fishery, on the same system. So I think there's just a lot of what ifs out there right now. You know, you know, there's no roads plowed. You know, it's obviously going to slow the ice making process down, but, you know, I've got an ATV, which I've been running around just fine with, and that's pretty much rendered useless right now unless you have tracks on it. You know, I'm not going to do a foot of snow with just a wheeled machine. It'd be a great year to have a snowmobile, which I don't, in order to get around. And as far as driving on these lakes, you know, I was sketchy, you know, before this snow because, like I said, ice conditions really varied in a lot of areas and within the lake and spots within them. So we're kind of just seeing what the carnage is still, you know, this weekend after this snow. And but I've got to believe it's going to be pretty tough to get around out there. I'm certainly glad I don't have a wheelhouse on a lake in my area right now because it's going to be some water underneath it and tough to move it about.
Well, I got to think bottom line, places that were sketchy a week ago, they're going to be just as sketchy this weekend, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the metro area, Twin Cities metro area, again, folks were starting to drive on some lakes, to be honest with you, Rob. I was surprised to hear that this week, you know, but they were getting on certain parts of these lakes, even in the metro and where I'm at and points south. And yeah, it certainly hasn't improved anything. I mean, you guys had more snow than I think we had here in the central part of the state, in the Twin Cities metro area. So
yeah, we had a lot.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, unless we get a big wind, that's going to blow some of this around, you know, or, you know, make some drifts so you can go around. But I didn't hear anything about that. A little bit of a cold front behind it, but we're a creative bunch.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
These diehard ice anglers and, you know, some way, somehow there'll be people out evaluating things. There'll be people on the lakes this weekend. I just, like I said earlier, the fun factor is going to go down quite a bit moving forward here.
Yeah, no, that's a good way to put it. This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Glenn Schmidt about ice conditions out there. Kind of a challenging year. I mean, considering we're already, what, January 7th, 8th, 9th?
Yeah.
Normally this time of year, you'd expect things to be in really good shape. But and they would be, but we've gotten a lot of snow, which is as Schmidty pointed out, acts the fun factor a little bit. How are things up north, farther up north? Do you know, Glenn, up, you know, Lake of the Woods, Red Lake? Some of those more northern locations where I don't think they had quite as much snow in it. And I presume it's been a little colder too.
You know, after this last snow here, Rob, I'm thinking, you know, Brainerd North, I know they probably had a little bit more snow than they originally anticipated in that Brainerd area. I heard something like 5 to 7 inches from there up to Longville area. And then it was a pretty distinct cutoff. I don't think they got much, if anything, beyond that, you know, Walker North in that area. So those lakes are in pretty good shape. The Leeches, the Winnies, you know, the Red Lakes, Lake of the Woods, and I got to believe they're going to be super busy moving forward here. You know, if people got an itch to go ice fishing, that's going to be your best option. It's from that Walker, Hackensack, Longville area north. Some of these bigger, you know, the state's more traditional, you know, walleye fisheries they're going to be busy. You know, it might be the only option for a lot of folks at this point, but ice conditions are good. They're starting to drive on those lakes. They've been driving on Red for weeks. Lake of the Woods is good to go. You know, I know they started driving on parts of Leech Lake and Winnie over the past 10 days here. So I think there was a pretty distinct cutoff line with this last snow. And so you're going to have some better opportunities as far as getting around and certainly with ice conditions. Like I said, when you go from Brainerd North.
Glenn, things should improve, right, in the next couple of weeks if we just get kind of some traditional basic Minnesota January weather, right?
Yeah, I mean, the cupboard's not empty here on the ice fishing season, right? I mean, again, we're creative. We're going to get out there. You know, there's enough ice to fish. And unfortunately, like I said, with this last round of snow, that was the unfortunate part is things were shaping up nicely. There was a lot of people out. The wheelhouses were coming out. You know, people were starting to drive on. But how much ice we're going to make, I don't know. We're going to need some cold weather here. Like I said, I haven't been out since we had this last snow, so I have no idea. I guess the best way to put it, if you're going to head out today or this weekend or moving forward, is kind of, you know, expect the worst and hope for the best, right?
Right.
I mean, it's we're just going to have to wait and see. Folks will be out this weekend and checking things out. And, you know, it's January, middle of January here, coming up on it now. So we'll be out there. We'll be making a little bit of ice. I think the snow and maybe even the slush now again in certain parts of the state are going to be a bigger issue than ice conditions. There's enough ice to fish and you can get out there with a track vehicle, a snowmobile or something like that and drive a truck if they're plowing roads and that type of thing. But kind of in a wait and see thing until we really get out there and start checking things out.
How's it going to change your fishing? We just got a moment left here, Glenn, but is it altered, you know, fishing pressure a little bit? Does that mean the fish might be behaving a little different? What we'd normally consider mid-ice walleyes, are they going to be more of an early walleye mood or is it more tied into, you know, daylight and that sort of thing? So they're going to do what they're going to do.
Well, and just real quick, start by this. You know, and the unfortunate part, when I did that fishing report last week in the paper, I think it was probably the best ice fishing we've had this year, mainly because people were getting to areas they couldn't get to before, right? There's more people fishing, more fish are going to be caught, right? People were getting out, finding new areas that they could fish. So I don't think it's going to change a whole lot with this. You know, we're talking this midwinter stuff now. You're still going to find fish. If you can find green weeds, there's going to be a mixed bag of fish, panfish, walleyes, northern pike, bass, whatever. Find those green weeds, you're going to still find fish. But as we move on here, you know, you're going to see more of these main lake structure type pieces, these mud flats, these bars, rock piles, underwater points, deeper water generally for walleyes moving forward. And your panfish, you know, crappies are notorious for being nomads in the winter. So find the deepest part you can in the lake. You're going to find suspended crappies. It might be 15 feet in a small fishery. It could be 30 feet or more on a bigger body of water, but wherever that deepest spot is, that basin area on a given lake, that's where you're going to find crappies and to some extent bluegills here as we're moving forward here into January. So certainly options out there if you can get at them and you know, kind of look to those traditional midwinter areas here. I think we're at that point right now, Rob.
Well, no two winters are ever the same, are they? We think it's the same. We think the leaves fall and the snow comes down and the ice forms, but it's amazing the variations we can have from year to year. Glenn, thanks for all you do on that fishing report, keeping people informed on where the hot bite is. And thanks for the insight here. I guess bottom line, we want people to go out and be safe, but we're going to have some good winter ice fishing yet this winter, aren't we?
Absolutely. Plenty of it left as well. It's only January. We got a lot of winter here yet. So yeah, get out and enjoy it. Be safe. Work through resort outfitter, bait shop, you know, get a little intel. You'll be fine. There's some fishing to be had yet.
Oh yeah. That walleye season goes another, six, seven weeks. Yep. So lots of opportunity.
Plenty of season left.
Schmitty, thanks a lot. You have a great week.
All right. You too. Appreciate it, Rob.
Glenn Schmidt, the man behind the Minnesota Outdoor News Fishing Report. Let's break more of the broadcast after these messages.
Mark your calendars. The 2023 Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic is back and better than ever. The show is scheduled from March 10th through March 12th at Canterbury Park in Shakopee. Make your plans now to get your antler scored at the show. The Deer and Turkey Classic wishes you, your friends, and your family a safe and successful 2022 deer hunt. And we're looking forward to seeing you in March at Canterbury Park. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com.
Why should you take a Minnesota DNR firearm safety course? Hi, this is DNR Conservation Officer Adam Block. Many states require hunters to furnish evidence of having completed a hunter education course before issuing a non-resident license. Don't let your next trip to your favorite hunting spot be cut short because of your lack of education. Take a DNR hunter education course. For more information, call 800-366-8917.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. Your work keeps our water clean, improves the soil, and enhances wildlife habitat. It also provides countless benefits, not just for you and your family, but for millions of Americans who depend on this region every day without even realizing it. Thank you for being stewards of America's prairie for all of us. Take a moment to find out how conservation pays. Visit conservationpays.org.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Every 2 seconds, someone special needs blood. A friend, a family member, a coworker. Someday, it could be you. In fact, right now, patients in local hospitals are relying on Memorial Blood Centers to be there with the blood they need to survive. And that means we're relying on you to step up and make a life-saving difference. Make a date to help save a life. Visit mbc.org today to make an appointment to donate blood. That's mbc.org.
No matter where your passion for the outdoors takes you, bring Outdoor News along. With the new Outdoor News Digital Edition, you can now get your outdoor news anytime, anywhere, and on any device. No need to wait for the mailman. Just open the custom app on your smartphone or tablet, or log on to your computer, and the latest edition of Outdoor News is ready for you when you want it. You can also read previous issues from the edition archives. Go to digitaledition.outdoornews.com for access today.
Hey folks, welcome back to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreisline with you again, back half of this week's broadcast. Tim Lesmeister is going to join me. We'll talk about what's going on out there. If you like the content of the broadcast, give us a call at 800-535-5191. I'd love to get you a subscription to Outdoor News, either print or digital. A new website is up and running. Please check that out at outdoornews.com. We're going to have a paywall up in a few weeks, so enjoy it while you can, and I hope you like it a lot and you consider subscribing once we get that paywall installed. With that, Tim Lesmeister joins me now. Tim, how are you, my friend?
Doing good.
Good, good. Yeah, we had our front page story on the year in review thing that I do every year where we look back at the past 12 months. Spielman and I did not talk about it. I thought it'd be fun for you and I to chat about it. You know, I didn't put them in any particular order. Well, we can kind of run through them. We got a new state wolf management plan. I guess the long and short of that is that wolves are still have been listed by the feds, so there's no opportunity for the DNR to offer any hunting or trapping. There are mechanisms and protocol within this plan to allow that to occur if and when the feds do delist.
I'm always crying for a wolf season, and I really think that the feds have screwed up the whole wolf program, and the states probably haven't done much better. But, you know, as I see the wolves and what's happening with them in the different states where they're present in numbers, they are kind of finding a bit of an equilibrium here, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I've been saying that for a long time. I completely agree.
I have not been saying that. I've been saying that they're growing, and we need to really thin them down to about half in just about every state where they're at. But, you know, as I look at Minnesota, they've kind of hit their high mark, and there's only so much forage that can go around.
And habitat.
There's only so much habitat.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think we're at a point right now where we're seeing that critical mass position that the wolves have entered, where they're not going to grow much in numbers, I don't think, at this point, unless they want to expand their range. And for some reason, they don't seem to be doing that.
Yeah, there's a few pockets of the country, Tim, where we don't have wolves that you probably could, you know, have a few packs survive. It's really hard for wolves to reach those areas and hit critical mass, right, to start establishing packs. I'm thinking, you know, even southeast Minnesota, I wouldn't rule that out. That bluffland country, it seems like you potentially could have a few wolves there. You know, and then you get farther south. Could you have wolves in southern Illinois, parts of Missouri, perhaps? But it's just a long way for wolves to go to get established.
And I think it'd be a little tough in those areas just because you have higher coyote populations there and guys that are hunting them.
Mm-hmm.
These people go out to hunt coyotes, and a lot of times they'll shoot wolves by accident.
Right.
Especially when they're in an area where, you know, there's a lot more coyotes than wolves. So if you start seeing wolves entering that area in southeast Minnesota, it'd be a good example, or northeast Iowa, somewhere there. I don't think they're going to last long, because I think the guys that are trapping coyotes that are shooting coyotes are actually going to end up taking the wolves either by accident or, who knows, maybe even on purpose. But, you know, the bottom line is that where they're expanding now, or even where they're just living now, because I don't see them expanding that rapidly in the areas where they're in, I think they're pretty much have established boundaries, and I don't see them expanding out beyond this too far.
Tim, another story we had on our top 10 list this year was the 100th anniversary of Federal Ammunition. You and I got up there and checked the place out as part of the festivities. It's in Anoka. It's a great Minnesota success story and a great American company, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And what they're doing, they never let any grass grow under their feet. You know, they started that custom bullet shop,
mm-hmm, yeah,
so that people that want to get some custom ammo made can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Not cheap, but really good stuff. High quality, extremely accurate.
Yeah.
I can think of no other manufacturer that's doing that. And, of course, they're bringing out brand new rounds with that 30 Super Carry.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a round that we got to test out when we were up at that Federal cartridge plant. And, I mean, you know, a lot of companies, basically, they might expand a line that they've already got or make little modifications. These guys are bringing out a whole new round in this particular case. So you can see that, you know, Federal cartridge they deserve all the accolades they get because, you know, they don't wait around for stuff to happen. They make it happen.
You know, I'm not going to get to the SHOT Show this year, Tim. I've got a couple other guys from Outdoor News attending that event. Just, 10 days from now? It's coming up fast. And one thing I'm going to tell those guys to look for is see if any of the handgun manufacturers have jumped on board to build some firearms to handle that new round. I believe when we talked to those guys at Federal, wasn't just Smith & Wesson? I don't think there were many options yet, but they fully expect there to be a lot of new handguns to accommodate that round soon.
Yeah, there were two options at the time, but I expect that there's going to be more. I'm waiting for some of these guns to come out in a very small profile, something you can slip in your pocket. Because if you look at that 30 super carry round, it's a lot thinner and a little bit longer, but a lot thinner, so you can put more into a magazine.
Exactly.
And it's going to be great in guns that don't hold a lot. Like if you look at this little Ruger that I carry around, you know, I can only hold 7 shots. I could put 10, you know, of the 30 super carry in that same size clip.
Yep.
So that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, that's the whole idea behind that innovative round. Outdoor News Radio, Rob Gerisano with Tim Lesmeister, talking through the top 10 stories from 2022. Tim, this one is a little bit linked, some would say, to our first story of wolves, but the looking like we're going to have the fewest number of white-tailed deer killed by hunters in 2022 since 2015. That's only 7 years. It's not like we're going back 40 years sort of thing, or back to the early 70s, right, when they closed the deer season. It's not like that. But nonetheless, 2015 was not necessarily a good year, and you don't want to be going that direction, especially when we thought we had a shot at 200,000 deer kill this past year.
Yeah, and it is funny that a lot of people blame the wolves, and they'll blame a lot of different things that don't deserve to be blamed, because I think in this particular situation, it's pretty much all has to do with the weather. It was an awful deer opener this year. The deer weren't moving. You know, my boys were up in the north central part of the state hunting deer, and over the weekend there was nothing moving. The weather was awful, and some of them stayed over into Monday, Tuesday, and the deer were moving great on those 2 days. That's when they ended up shooting their deer. And it just goes to show you that a lot of people think, well, once the hunters get out in the woods, they're going to move these deer. Yeah, sometimes it doesn't happen just because the deer don't want to move. And that's what happened. You know, it's funny because people always say, why does your son Jason always end up getting a lot of animals every year? You know, he got his mule deer. He's got his whitetail deer this year. I mean, my boys, you know, butchered between Iowa, Minnesota, Colorado, and all the places that these guys hunt. You know, we butchered 9 deer. How come these guys get deer? You know what? They put themselves in the right place at the right time. And that sounds simple, but it's not. I mean, you got to really work at that. But you also have to be there. You have to be there. And that's Jason. He's out before the sun comes up, and he's not in until the sun goes down. And he's always going to the high percentage areas, and he hunts very hard. And so, you know, if he doesn't get a deer at the end of the deer season, wherever he's hunting, everybody's always shocked.
Well, and there used to be a lot more guys, in my opinion, like Jason out there. And I don't think there are as many. I think Jason's kind of a dwindling breed, and that's perhaps one reason we're not killing as many deer. Tim, Chuck Delaney, we gave him a special edition of the Outdoor News Leaders Award. We called it a Lifetime Achievement Award. Chuck, of course, the owner and founder of Gamefair in Anoka. A couple of Anoka-based stories here today. Chuck, in his 80s, still going strong up there at Game Fair. It's a great event. He lost his wife in 2021, Lorelei. That was sad, tragic. It was the first Game Fair without Lorelei. I was glad we were able to present him that award and kind of have something positive for him, because I know he was in tough shape there without Lorelei this past fall.
Nice picture of you and Chuck here. You know, people don't realize how much this individual has done for outdoor sports over the years and how many people he's brought into the dogs, the shooting, and the hunting in the state. I mean, his Game Fair every year runs for 2 weekends. He's been doing it for a very, very long time. It's a show that's grown quite extensively over the years. And I know a lot of people that actually ended up getting hunting dogs because of attending his show, and good dogs with good trainers. And that usually leads to some good hunting. And once you have that, you know, you're pretty much hooked for life.
And final topic of this segment, we'll talk about the other 5 in our final segment, Tim. But
It's another rite of autumn. Every year, one of the Hauptmans wins the federal duck stamp. And this year, it was Joe Hauptman. He won it for the sixth time, tying his brother Jim with six wins. Other brother Bob's got three wins, so maybe he'll take his shot again in 2023. We'll see. But they're truly a machine, aren't they, those guys?
Because they know what the judges want. If you look at the stuff that they're painting, it's always stuff that is real enjoyable to see. It your eyes love this stuff. They're like a band that knows how to pick hits. They know what to put on the canvas. Mm-hmm. And not only are they great painters, don't get me wrong, they're phenomenal. But, you know, you compare their stuff to some of the other works of art that are entered into these shows. And when you look at theirs, it just makes you feel good. And that's what it's all about. And I think the judges feel that as well. And that's why the Hauptmans win. They know how to pick hits.
They got it dialed in. And the other thing about them is they're just great guys, all three of them. It's been a pleasure to get to know them and interview them over the years. They're really good people. Let's break. Tim and I will be back. We'll talk about the other five top 10 stories from 2022 when we return. This is Outdoor News Radio.
Reel in your next catch with Fleet Farm. Shop the Midwest's largest in-store selection of ice fishing gear and get everything you need all in one stop. Going on now. Get a Vexilar FL18 SE Ginspack Fish Locator for just $359.99. You can check out this deal and more in-store or online at fleetfarm.com. Find all the gear you need at Fleet Farm, your ice fishing headquarters.
At Borderview Lodge on Lake of the Woods, we know ice fishing. Clean, comfortable fish houses, privately plowed ice roads, transportation to a heated fish house, and top-notch food and lodging after a day of catching walleyes. It's another great year of walleye fishing on Lake of the Woods, and with day houses or sleepers, Borderview Lodge will put you on the fish. Book your ice fishing trip today at BorderviewLodge.com. That's BorderviewLodge.com.
Hey, Steve Panaz here. For too long, Minnesota anglers have not had a strong voice at the legislature or the DNR. You can help ensure the quality of state fisheries by joining the MinFish Sport Fishing Foundation. Individual memberships are free and life memberships are available. MinFish Foundation is dedicated to restoring, protecting, and enhancing Minnesota sport fishing opportunities. To join us, visit min-fish.com.
There's a great program available for youth who love to hunt and fish. It's called the Outdoor News Junior Pro Team, and any youth 18 or under can join for free at jrproteam.com. JPT program showcases useful videos and tips to help encourage the next generation to become stronger anglers and hunters. It's a platform to celebrate and inspire those outdoor-loving youth. Check out the photos of Outdoor News Junior Pro Team members on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube, and visit our jrproteam.com for more information.
Mark your calendars. The 2023 Minnesota Deer and Turkey Classic is back and better than ever. The show is scheduled from March 10th through March 12th at Canterbury Park in Shakopee. Make your plans now to get your antler scored at the show. The Deer and Turkey Classic wishes you, your friends, and your family a safe and successful 2022 deer hunt. And we're looking forward to seeing you in March at Canterbury Park. Learn more at mndeerclassic.com.
Since 1967, Outdoor News has been Minnesota's go-to news source for all things out of doors. Generations of hunters and anglers have welcomed Outdoor News into their home each week, enjoying the most up-to-date news, features, columnists, fishing and hunting reports, gear reviews, and much, much more. For less than a dollar a week, you can join thousands of other Minnesota sportsmen and continue the long-standing tradition of subscribing to Outdoor News. Both print and digital versions are available. Start your subscription today at outdoornews.com/subscribe.
Welcome back, folks. Outdoor News Radio. Rob Jerisline with you for our final segment of this week's broadcast. I'm chatting with my friend Tim Lesmeister. We're talking down the top 10 stories from 2022. I hope you like the broadcast. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com. New and improved website there. Or give us a call at 800-535-5191. Tim, picking up where we left off, arguably the biggest outdoor story nationwide. You tell me if I'm wrong, if you disagree. But this story on Lake Erie, this walleye tournament with this cheating scandal, these guys who allegedly stuffed lead weights and what some other
fillets inside their walleyes for a weigh-in. I mean, that was everywhere. That was international news. Certainly, you saw it on all the big news sites, CNN, New York Times, Washington Post. It was everywhere. What a story.
And I just still this day cannot figure out why this thing had legs like it did, because it was just some guys that wanted to win a tournament. So they loaded up the fish that they had caught with some extra weight, like you said, by, you know, dumping in some lead and even some fish carcass into their fish. And I think to myself, well, it's good that they got caught. They've probably been doing it in the past, and that's why, you know, they had their eyes on them. But, you know, it didn't seem that unusual to me. Occasionally people try to cheat in tournaments and they get busted. But for some reason, this one really caught the attention of everybody.
Yeah.
And it just went wild.
A couple points, Tim. I mean, one, there was a lot of money on the line, right? These were big money tournaments. So I think,
big money.
You know, and there were some pretty serious charges levied at these guys because of the amount of money on the line. So that was one facet. You know, it was really visual, right? You know, you look at here's the bucket with the lead weights and the fillets falling out of the fish. And fishing is kind of this pure activity, right? Everyone's gone fishing once in their life. It's got these positive vibes about it. And here's these guys trying to rip off their fellow anglers. And they haven't been convicted yet, so we got to be clear about that. But it definitely was a huge story. It had a lot of news legs.
It really did. It was huge. And very possibly because, you know, people think of fishing as being this sport where all these guys go out and the only reason that they lie is because they want you to think they caught something that was a little bigger and weighed a little bit more, but never to actually try and cheat. So, you know, yeah, fishermen are liars, but they're not cheaters. In this particular case, they were.
Tim, another headline, unfortunately, every year, you know, I debated putting this in the top 10, but I don't think we can ignore it. Every year, CWD continues to expand in Minnesota and Wisconsin. What do we have it in the Bemidji area, I believe, in Minnesota this year. And then just a couple weeks ago, we reported how it's hit in Buffalo County, really ground zero for trophy buck hunting in the upper Midwest, really the country. It doesn't seem to be going away. We're doing what we can to try to curb it, but it just keeps expanding, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think it's almost like these exotic species that take over a lake, and it just seems that there's no stopping it, that it's just going to keep expanding into other areas, and we're not going to be able to rid ourselves of the CWD. Now, federally, Congress just okayed some CWD money for the states, and I hope that some of that cash gets used wisely to figure out how we can curb it. And what I want to be able to do is knock it down to the point where it only affects a few deer every year. If we can get that done, I'll be happy enough.
Yeah.
Because I think stopping it completely may never happen.
I think eventually that some immunity might build, sort of like sheep have built some immunity to scrapie. But I mean, that ain't going to be in our lifetime, Tim. That's going to be generations from now, unfortunately. Yeah. Howard Vincent announced last year he's going to be retiring from Pheasants Forever. I thought that was a pretty big story. Vincent has been in that role for 20 years. Only the second guy to ever have that job. An accountant by trade, he's done a bang-up job in growing and expanding that organization. One of the smartest people in conservation. I'm glad he's going to be able to retire when he's relatively young and still get out there and do some pheasant hunting and enjoy his time. He deserves it. But it's a loss for the conservation community.
I would have chained him to a desk in the Pheasants Forever offices. And I mean, come on, the guy has done a phenomenal job at Pheasants Forever. And to lose him, I mean, a lot of people are out there, they're still crying. I run across these people that are Pheasants Forever, you know, air chapter heads, and they're just walking around, head between their legs, crying like babies. I mean, come on, let's chain him to his desk, keep him around.
You talk to some conservation leaders, younger guys around the country, Whit Fosberg, Lantani, and, you know, who are their mentors? Who do they respect in the outdoor industry, and they'll all say Howard Vincent. So
yeah, Howard Vincent was great. He's going to be missed. There's no doubt about that.
We should know very soon who his successor will be. In fact, I will probably be checking on that for next week's Outdoor News. And now, Tim, you got some friends of ours up at Lake of the Woods you'd like to talk about for a moment.
Well, if you've been fishing on Lake of the Woods, I'm preaching to the choir. But if you haven't, you need to get up there for some of the best ice fishing ever. Right now, there's a lot of slush on a lot of lakes, not on Lake of the Woods. They've got shacks out where they need to be. They've been plowing roads. And booking your stay couldn't be easier because Riverbend Resort has an incredible variety of fishing packages that will easily suit any level of angler and fit any budget. Do you want to bring your own equipment, get comfy in a cabin and head out each day to fish, or even camp out on the ice and fish nonstop? Riverbend Resort can make it happen no matter how you want it tailored. The only thing missing is you. Check out the many options at riverbendresort.com. I love these guys. riverbendresort.com.
Let's jump back now into our review of the top 10 stories from 2022. Tim, the DNR, I don't know if you and I have talked about this, but the DNR unveiled this new record fish program that they're soliciting public comments on through, I think, through January 2023, where they're going to expand the number of fish eligible for the catch and release category, go back and look at some of these, and you know, anything caught before 1980, we're going to say, you know, that's like a historical record. We're going to have new certified records. I guess we've talked about this a little bit. You're on board with it, right? It's a good idea.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I like these catch and release. You know, this guy named Eric Bach out of Princeton back in November caught a new state record muskie out of Lake Mille Lacs. Mm-hmm. That was in June that he caught it, but they certified it in November. You know, this is the kind of stuff I like to see because it allows some legitimacy to the records, first of all. And there's going to be situations where there's the opportunity to catch a fish that's even just a little bit bigger than that and maybe beat that record. So we're seeing a lot of new interest in records again with the catch and release. And they're opening it up to a few more classes of fish. And that's going to actually increase interest. So I do like this. I'm not a huge guy when it comes to records. But that's basically the old records that, I mean, some of these, you know, muskellunge that weighed like 90 pounds, right. Forget it. You know, they didn't exist.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of one of those guys that thinks, hey, you know what? I love this catch and release stuff because it's hard to beat. You can't, they're legitimate records, and it's a lot of fun to see these photos and these people that are taking advantage of all these new designations and all this new opportunity.
Jim, the final story I listed from 2022 involved a man that I never met. You probably met him. You know, I'm not a big bass tournament fishing guy, but there's no doubt that Ray Scott played a very, very important role in transforming how we view fishing in North America.
Ray Scott, 88 years old when he died. This guy was the consummate promoter, professional bass angling, started BASS. This guy was the one that put bass fishing and competitive bass fishing, right, on the map. Mm-hmm. He created so many heroes in this category. Bill Dance, Roland Martin, Jimmy Houston, you know, Rick Klun, Larry Nixon, all these guys. Kevin Van Dam. You wouldn't even know who Kevin Van Dam was, right, yeah, if it hadn't have been for Ray Scott and his BASS organization. And that's the kind of stuff that literally created, you know, Bass Pro Shops and made Cabela's what it is today, because it expanded fishing to the point where, you know, everybody wanted to be a bass pro. Everybody wanted to be one of those, you know, super anglers, the Ranger boats. You look at that. That was basically the, you know, that's what happens when you take a tournament like that and make a catch and release. Someone develops a boat behind it. So, yeah, I when we lost Ray Scott, we lost an individual that was, you know, an icon who's got a legacy that's going to go on for a long time.
A true visionary. Tim, did you ever meet him? Did you ever meet Ray Scott?
Oh, yeah, many times.
He did a lot for conservation, too, right? I mean, besides catch and release, I think he did a lot for, you know, trying to improve freshwater fishing habitat and riparian areas and that sort of thing. I don't think we can forget that. He saw the big picture.
He did see the big picture. He promoted it hard and heavy and made sure things happened. Like I say, he was a guy that if he wanted something to happen, it did.
Well, anyway, Tim, yeah, there's our top 10 list. I appreciate you spending some time going through that with me. And I'm ready for a little more consistent weather so we can build some decent ice and try to enjoy some good winter activities. We got the snow now to do it, that's for sure. Well, anyway, with that, Tim, we're out of time. Thanks a lot for spending a couple segments with me. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year, Rob. It's always great fun.
All right, Tim Lesmeister. We are out of time. I sure appreciate our guests and the listeners who've joined us for the past 60 minutes. Everybody have a great week out of doors. I'm Rob Jerisline signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story and the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.